Hello, everybody. I'm Terry Boy Lover Eggs, and this is the Sneaky What Are Ya Dragon Gonna Do podcast.
I'm going to interrupt you right there, Terry. Hi, everybody. I'm Ian Boothby, half of the Sneaky Dragon podcast, and I didn't agree to any of this. All right. Long story short, there was a court-mandated thing. You don't need to know the reason why, but we are required to do this podcast together today. So we are merging.
Suffice to say, it has to do with Nazi art treasures, and that's all I'm going to say about it.
That's right, and some of us brought some apples over the border.
That's the other problem. Yes.
And you didn't declare them.
We didn't declare them.
Well, I declared them too much. I got a little braggy about them. Anyway.
So this is what, on the what are you going to do end of things.
Yes.
This is, so you guys are Nazi art dealers. That's how you've made your fortune.
We wish.
Oh, okay, great.
We're trying to work our way up.
Oh, okay.
Humble beginnings. Come on.
That's right. We're not quite skinheads. We're male pattern baldness in the level of Nazis.
Yes.
So we're just experimenting a little bit, but we should introduce ourselves. Yeah. Think, like in general. Anyway, I have said that I'm Ian Boothby. My co-host normally is
David Dedrick.
But there's other gentlemen here who are running their own podcast, and they are.
Yes, I'm Terry Russell. This is Stephen Hamm.
And we do the What Are You Gonna Do podcast, yeah. And we're doing a co-podcast today.
Yes.
Right, officially, if you're keeping numbers at home on our podcast, it's 120. And you guys don't like to, tax reasons, you don't like to say the number out loud.
Chances are we're not going to actually put
we
this up on
we kept getting
our
it wrong, so rather than having to edit the tape, we just...
Yeah, it gets hard. Once you get up to 20, it gets hard.
Yeah. Exactly. I had to take my shoes off and boom.
Yeah, once we passed 100, we sort of went, we really should be improving on these. And since we're clearly not, so, it does get embarrassing.
You guys have no improvement over 100 episodes, you figure. You've done 100 episodes of Sneaky Dragon.
Well, if you listen to episode 118, you would know there's been no improvement. Really.
That was a recent one where Dave forgot to hit record.
I hit record.
That's why we don't number.
I think that's the one I tried to listen to. I couldn't because it hurt my ears.
Yeah, it's a hard one. I didn't forget to hit record. What I did was I forgot to change the input, so it was taking it from the... our microphones, and instead the laptop computer mic was recording the entire program, so it did not sound good. And I don't blame you for not listening to it, quite frankly.
I haven't listened to any of your podcasts, actually.
That's okay.
I've listened to half of yours.
Oh, okay.
On the way over,
it's called research. I tell you to look it up, but clearly you don't know how.
I don't know how to research things. No, I have listened to bits and pieces, and it's funny.
Well, I think your show has a really interesting concept behind it, which is the idea that you have... This idea of the show that you guys have reached this point in your life where you feel like time to make
doing.
A change. We don't know what we're doing, you know, and I'm kind of in the same boat in that I put all my eggs into the, I'm going to be an artist basket.
Yeah.
And then it turns out that artists, in my case, it didn't really work out the way I wanted to. Yeah. And so I'm not an artist. I'm a person who works for a medical supply company and I'm not making the money that I wanted. And so I think it's really interesting that your show is about what are you going to do to change the situation you find yourself in when you hit your 40s or late 40s, and then what are you going to do?
Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
What am I doing about it? I don't know. I started a podcast, I guess, just so I can whine about it.
Also, let me just throw this out. When you say, like, I want to be an artist, but you do a piece of art for the podcast every week, but you've tricked yourself. Because I think this is what I think about Dave. It's like, Dave, if you say, Dave, you got to draw something, I can't. But if you say, listen, we're going to build a truck, and you got to paint the side of the truck, then you can paint the side of the truck with a beautiful piece of art.
Yes.
But we got to trick you. We can't, you know, so what we've done is tricked you in that you're doing a podcast, but it's really an excuse for you to do a title card every week that are these beautiful pieces of work that you throw, you know, a whole day into.
And what do you get paid for that?
Nothing.
Okay, good. Right on. What are you going
to
do?
What are you going to do? Because it's hard to monetize yourself, you know, like you hear about it, but you never see it. So it's an interesting, the podcast world is interesting. I think of it as sort of more of a creative hobby for me than it is.
Right.
Something I think of. I didn't even think of it in terms of monetizing.
Yeah. Why did you decide? You decided to do it just for the hell of it? Because it's fun.
Yeah, I think so. I guess I was the one who came up with the idea. I just went to not with the idea of podcasting, but I just heard podcasts and I thought these are really interesting.
Yeah.
And Ian and I are interesting. And so it'd be fun if we just got together, you know, and just talked, did a show together. And Ian comes out of improv.
Yeah.
And so I thought that'd be a good format for us. You know, we don't plan it. We just sit down. Yeah, we just sit down and just go on the microphones.
And I say yes when friends of mine ask if I can do something with them that doesn't take longer than 3 days.
Right.
Like, there's people who will ask you, we're going to do this feature film, not interested, but we're going to shoot something for a weekend. Yeah, I'll record this album with you. I'll do this. I'll shoot a short film, you know, whatever. And so, yeah, once a week doing this made sense. And, yeah, we gave it a shot.
Well, you got to do some stuff for free, right? I mean, that's unfortunately, I mean, I do pretty much everything for free. But, but.
Now, do you feel embarrassed asking for money? Because I think with Dave's thing here when he's going not monetizing it.
Yeah.
But then again, you've never asked for money. That's the thing. It's like you've got all this art, but you would never think of selling it. You would feel weird doing that. That I think is the big problem.
That's a bit odd, yeah. Like I've tried to sell my art before.
Yeah.
Whatever. You know. I mean, not art, my music, man.
You guys have sold your art. I mean,
yes, I guess we have, yeah.
Well, I guess we should tell Sneaky Dragon listeners that Ham, I'm going to call you Ham because I know you as Ham.
Yeah.
Ham and Terry were in Slow, band Slow, which I think is really a really well-known band. And if you don't know who they were, they're kind of like a proto grunge band that was quite popular in Vancouver in the mid 80s.
Yeah.
And you know, I saw you guys a couple times. And I always would say to people, well, when say Nirvana or Mudhoney or Soundgarden, I'd say, you guys missed Slow. Like, what? This is not that interesting. You guys missed when it started. You know, I remember going to a show with you and Green River. And
I think we recorded that. That was our last show. Was it at the Town Pump?
I don't think I recorded it.
Okay, someone recorded it. Okay,
that would have been smart.
Yeah. Ask you about that.
Okay. No, it wasn't us.
Why did I think it was you?
I don't know. Maybe because we were going around we're trying to get people to contribute to a Christmas tape we were doing.
Right.
We got Green River did Away in a Manger for us.
Right. Cool. Well, recording.
Yeah.
It was a Christmas. For the Christmas song, we had our encore, which was...
Oh, okay. That's
Hair of the Dog by Nazareth.
Oh, okay, we did that on Vancouver.
Oh.
That's where that ended up then.
It was going to be on a Christmas compilation, too.
Was it?
Oh, it's just like, it's Nazareth, it's Christmas. Sure, why not?
Oh, that's right. No, you're right. That's right. It was on our second one. It was on our second Christmas one. You're right. Come on, you guys. That was the 80s.
So you guys were making tapes back in the 80s. I didn't even know.
We did one that was, because my friend and I, we did a fanzine called Generic Drivel together.
Right, yeah. I remember Generic Drivel.
Yeah. And so we would just go around to bands and ask them to contribute songs to them. Because we didn't make any money either. And we would just do, like, we did one that was called Vancover, which was all bands doing cover versions of various songs. And then we did two Christmas ones. Those were fun. And people were incredibly generous. We just kind of give you, here's a song.
But you also
much easier asking for art than it is to ask for money.
There you go.
Well, that's the thing. You don't have the shame when you're that age.
Yeah.
You
know, that too, that, yeah.
You're so jazzed up with hormones or whatever that you've got no shame. So you can go up to a band and go like, hey, you want to do something for us for free? Whereas now I would think you would have a hard time doing that.
No, I can still do that.
You can still ask people for free stuff.
Bands are always desperate. Actors
and comedians as well. They'll do a free show for you in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like that's the difference between us then and us now is that I've developed shame over the last 20 years.
For asking for stuff.
It's true.
Yeah, I guess so.
I think for Rob and I, Rob Repsol, who I did Generic Drivel with, because there was two of us, we could team up on people, you know, so we could corner Peter Buck in a bathroom at the Commodore and, you know, try and talk him into doing an interview for our little fanzine.
All your stories end up in bathrooms.
Well, you know, it's a popular place to corner people.
It was the 80s.
We just saw him go in there and we're like, this is our one chance to talk to this person with no one else around him. So we both went into the bathroom and, you know, we got backstage passes and we did an interview with Michael Stipe.
Cool.
You know, so... You know, it doesn't hurt to ask, I guess, is the lesson there. And I mean, we talked to Husker Du, we talked to Henry Rollins, you know, lots of people who would seem unapproachable or like way beyond us were like so approachable then. But I think it was a different attitude too, though, because I mean, the punk aesthetic was still around.
DIY, it was do everything yourself.
Yeah.
And
that's right.
Well, this is one of the nice things about having a podcast is I now have something to ask people.
That's true.
If I run into somebody famous, I don't just ask them for an autograph. Now it'll be like, hey, you want me on our podcast?
Like, well, that's where it, that's where it feels like the podcast is similar to your fanzine to me, because you're talking about do it yourself.
Mm.
I mean, if you could see where we're sitting, this could not be more do it yourself. Though it's weird, like I do stuff for CBC, and whenever I go to CBC, they've got all this old timey equipment and it looks huge and amazing, and someone just whips out a digital recorder that looks exactly like these things, and this is how people are really doing it now.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Yeah, it does seem amazing. I remember even in the 90s, listening to Definitely Not the Opera, and they were recording shows onto mini-disc, which seemed weird because, you know, but
well,
smart.
Yeah, you know. Here in this big facility downtown, they've got millions of dollars of gear, and they whip out a $200 recorder, and there you go. Yeah, it's easy.
Yeah.
It's super easy, yeah.
Whenever I'm at CBC, I go, you don't need all this space, do you? Shut up. No, you don't. No way do you need all this space.
I want to be recording to like a $2,000 reel of tape that only can hold 10 minutes.
That's right.
Yes.
Well, yeah. CBC bulk erased everything I did in the 80s. I used to do a show called Switchback, and they've just deleted absolutely everything.
Oh, you're on Switchback. You worked on Switchback anyway. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Did you work on Switchback?
Never worked on Switchback. No, but one of our guests.
Michael Rizzotti.
Oh, okay. Yeah, what did he do on Switchback?
He was like he wasn't one of the early producers or directors or something. What did he do? He was like from the get go when they were doing it with. Were they doing it with Terry David Mulligan?
Never did it with Terry David. Who was that? Stu Jeffries.
Stu Jeffries.
He was the last guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Stu Jeffries was a guy who interviewed Slow.
Okay.
Because
he also did Good Rockin' Tonight because the studios were right across. Like
no, it wasn't Stu. It wasn't
no, it's
Stu
a guy
Jeffries.
Before Stu Jeffries.
Right,
the guy
was
who was
Rick
in
Newman.
Sweet Dick.
Yeah, Richard Newman.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And
you guys were interviewed for Switchback?
We were on Switchback. Slow was on Switchback.
Oh, wow.
Like
wow.
With Stu Jeffries.
Then I was probably, okay, was it Richard Newman?
No, it was
Newman?
Richard Newman. It was Richard Newman.
Right. No, we did it with Stu Jeffries.
Guy had brown curly hair.
Young
guy, though.
I don't know if Richard Newman was ever a young guy. No. He's kind of a longer-haired, balding guy with a mustache.
No,
real heavy.
No.
We're mixing two
Rick
stories.
Scott was the first
we had
host.
A guest on our podcast,
okay,
Artie Kane, who used to go by the moniker Michael Rizzotti.
All right.
And he was a producer who worked with Rick Newman in the old days. He also worked on The Rays and Rennie Simard.
Okay, all right.
He was a CBC guy. He cut his teeth on the Beachcombers.
Mm-hmm. Everyone did.
Yeah.
Yes.
Everyone
yes.
did. If you were a short enough actor too in town, you would do the Beachcombers, but there was a certain height requirement.
Because you couldn't be taller than Bruno Taruzzi.
Exactly
right.
Yeah. So it was either walking a trench. It was the Michael J. Fox rule.
As I used to say, Beachcombers was like the primordial ooze from which the Western Canadian film industry sprang. Like
But it developed a great crop of short actors that when, you know, your Arnold Schwarzeneggers and whatever showed up, were like, hey, we got a bunch of shorties for you here. We can work with all you short guys. Tom Cruise, show up, buddy. We're all set to go.
How did we get off? Oh, Switchback. Yeah, you worked on Switchback.
That was the first thing I did, used to watch the show, and I would just send in scripts, and then I got on the air, and then what I would do is I'd skip out of high school, because I hated high school, and I'd go into the CBC, which you could do then, because later on, they put up security because of something a friend of Dave's did. But I would sneak in, and I would just sneak scripts under producers' doors. And they would sometimes give me work. And occasionally they put my scripts on the air and not tell me and not pay me.
Right.
And I'd have to go and pursue them on that. It was a real loosey-goosey time.
I think it's still like that, isn't it?
A little bit.
You still kind of have to pursue them.
Oh, I have to pursue the checks. Yeah,
exactly.
So I got to ask, this whole security thing.
Yeah.
Did someone get cornered in a bathroom?
Maybe.
That was when there was a lot more troughs.
There was a lot more
peeing troughs, so you could like just sidle up to a fella and go.
I miss the trough. That is the most efficient bathroom system.
That was the
They're hard to
of
miss
the
though. It's a big target.
Nothing moves people out faster than the trough. Like you go to a GM Place now, it's all not only is it like, you know, individual urinals, they're all like divided from each other by little partitions. Like, when did we get so shy that we can't just pee together, squished in a trough, like at the Pacific Coliseum?
Yeah, man, I know. What's happened to us?
And you feel sheepish if it's every second one is in use and you have to go between two guys.
That's right.
It's like, sorry, but it's...
Then you think to yourself, I used to pee in a trough. Why am I being self-conscious? It's ridiculous.
Cowboy style.
Now
they got to put
the handstand
up there for you to watch.
I did a handstand and peed in the trough.
What?
No, I did not.
And that's how you got the interviews.
No one. That's right. That's impressive, man. I will come in your fan.
If you were starting nowadays, you would have your podcast set up in the bathroom. And just when the people came in, hey, come on over here for a second now that you're done.
I'm the guy on my upside down peeing in the trough. Come be on my podcast.
That's right. No one knows where we record our podcast.
Could be a urinal trough in this room, as far as people know.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah.
How I miss it.
There it is. Let's just imagine there it is.
I like your serious expression.
Smell the smell of the urinal pucks as a pee walks down the trough.
You say it, we visualize it.
Man's a poet.
Now, in
word pictures. Sound effects.
In your 20 episodes, have you learned anything?
No.
Good. All right. Well done.
No, have
job
we?
Well done.
Have we?
Time.
What
have we
learned? Nobody else knows what they're going to do either.
Yeah, that's what we've learned.
Yeah.
I was like, well, how have you? I haven't done anything. What are you talking about? I don't know. I was hoping you guys would know what to do. And I was like, we don't know. We're trying to figure this out.
So this is the opposite of the TED Talks.
Yes, exactly.
It's uninspiring.
Yeah.
It's just coming here like, I don't know. I think we're all screwed. Yeah. That's right. Well, done.
It's called the debt talks.
That's right. I'm $10,000 more in debt than I was when we started this. Fantastic. What are you going to do? What are you doing on your phone? Terry's at work while
I'm trying to figure out how to stop it from making a noise before it makes a noise.
Oh,
but now
okay.
that you're talking about it, we have now generated noise. So
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Never mind.
It'll all come out in the wash. Mm-hmm. So speaking of selling art, then, you guys are, I heard in the grapevine,
yes.
I.e. via your podcast, that you guys are...
oh, my Lord. Sorry. I blame you.
That wasn't Terry. I heard you guys are going to be selling, now I'm blanking on the name.
We're against, selling anything you want.
Against the Glass?
The idea is it's going to come out hopefully in the new year, hopefully in the fall. But yeah, to be continued.
Oh, is that right?
That's, totally. Yeah.
A lot of negotiations and heavy duty lawyering up. And
No. no lawyering up. No. Have you got any money? I don't know. You got any money?
Oh, okay. That kind of thing. Right? Okay.
Yeah. Can we apply for a grant? I thought you were going to apply for a grant. That kind of thing.
You guys could do an Indiegogo campaign.
We could actually. Yeah, I bet we would.
Or Kickstarter. Now you can do that in Canada. Yeah.
Can you do that in Canada as well?
Yes. Yeah.
The thing about Indiegogo is if you don't quite make your minimum, you can still keep the money.
Right.
There's a penalty, but you get to keep your money. Whereas with Kickstarter, if you don't make your whatever you set as your minimum amount,
now with Kickstarter though, is it same with Indiegogo? Because when we were talking to Shane on our show,
Shane Nelken, former friend of the show.
He would have his project next to a puppy that's sick,
right.
And it's like you need to give their money to him or puppy that needs to get his foot replaced with a human foot. For some reason, I don't know why they're doing that.
Yeah.
But it's
all the rage these days.
Puppies
with human feet. One human.
What? One human foot.
Because that's adorable.
Then you say, I have an iPad.
But you're up against a weird mix of stuff, whereas I think the Kickstarter, you'd probably be in a category.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You would be sensible.
There you go.
Maybe
he
we'll
makes more
that.
Sense
Maybe
me.
We'll do a Kickstarter to get the sucker going.
Yeah.
Not a bad idea, actually.
Because you guys have a history as a band that, you can, I hate to say exploit, but I'm going to say you can exploit.
We can exploit it.
Yeah,
I just want to exploit it. Get those songs out there again so they can make us some royalties.
Yeah.
Sorry, loyal fans, but that's my motivation.
That's right. I already have the record, so I don't need another one. So
why would a fan not want you to make money and do well? Wouldn't that make you make more things instead of giving up?
Well, that's the kind of...
With Grant McDonough of Zulu Records, love you, Grant, but it was always felt at the time that it was like he wanted us to fail so that 30 years later he could be like, check out this great record I put out in the 80s that failed, right? And I was like, Enigmas, go for three. Slow.
Yeah, that's right. So he was making
it. It was
drink.
Really. It's really.
I
it's
see.
Fall.
That was
it's
his
all
fault.
That was a long-term plan.
He was the long tail, I think they call it.
You know what you guys should do? Get really wasted before you go up on stage.
Yeah.
That's the recipe for success, fellas. Recipe.
Well, jeepers, Grant. We've never done that before. How would we go about that?
I saw some shows.
There was some drinking going on.
Well, it's interesting now when you're talking about grants. I was just running into an artist friend of mine, Colin Upton, who was complaining about it. He applied for Canada Council grants and all this kind of stuff and, got turned down.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, boy.
Well, he speaks with a British accent. So they don't know he's Canadian.
Right? For no reason. That's true. Let's establish that.
Yeah.
It was one of those rare British accents that just developed organically on its own.
He never used to have one, but he does now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's true. Did he always have an English accent?
A little bit. Okay. It used to come and go, and now it's stayed.
Yeah.
Now it's bedded down. I think because he's lost a lot of weight.
Right.
So his body is concentrated, and it's just gotten more British.
Everything that wasn't British, he lost.
He drank enough tea that has now overcome the rest of
his teeth. Are gotten terrible.
That's right. Yeah.
And yet, unlike a British person, he can't get funding for his art.
That's right. That's right.
But I was saying to him about Kickstarter, and he didn't really even know about it.
Yeah, Colin lives in a bit of a... Yeah,
I mean, that's the amazing thing to me now. Sheltered. It's like, imagine us back when we're talking in the 80s.
Yeah.
And by the way, it was Sneaky Dragon. If you hear us talking about our past, you got to take a drink.
Oh, yeah.
So please do.
Okay.
Take a drink.
Right.
But if there was someone giving away free money, wouldn't we be all over that then?
I don't know.
Now we're kind of, that place where you go for the free money?
Well, even back then, there was grants and stuff. Yeah. And as well, should we apply for a grant? And it's like... They won't give it to us.
But that's Johnny Government, right? I mean, you're applying to, also in French. But now it's just like, hey, people who like the kind of thing we like, would you give us money? Yes, we would. I don't know. I don't know about that.
I mean, we still had trouble getting people to pay a cover charge. Like, the old joke, how many punk rockers does it take to screw in a light bulb?
How many?
100. 1 to screw it in and 99 to get on the guest list. But I'm bummed.
I've been there. Why do you think I saw Black Flag every 3 months? I was on the guest list. There really wasn't any other reason to go to the concerts.
But Kickstarter, though, that's a good idea. Maybe we should give that a shot.
Yeah.
Maybe we should try it out. Yeah.
Yeah. So then our loyal listeners can learn all about how Kickstarter works.
Exactly. Yes. At least it's an experience that you can use grist for the mill, as I like to call everything that happens to me in my life.
No, I'm confident the slow stuff is going to come out in the fall.
Good.
Very
confident about that. Yes. Yes. Good. Yes. Yes.
Good. That's good to hear.
Yeah. What was I going to say? I had a question.
Of course, that will devalue my EP that I have, but
sell it now.
I'll sell it now.
You know exactly when to sell it.
Get on eBay.
I'll let you know exactly when it's coming out. So
get on eBay.
Get that eBay. Yeah.
Going money.
They probably. Everyone's telling me those records are wearing out. Like they're cheap 80s vinyl, and they're starting to like. They're not doing so well.
Well,
like it's starting to disintegrate.
I guess it depends if you played it on your mom and dad's record peeler or if you played it on a
well,
nice
plus
stereo.
It's 45 RPM, so you know.
Yeah, it goes a lot.
Wears it out quicker.
Yeah, I guess it does.
A lot of friction.
Yeah.
Yeah, heat generated from that sucker.
That's why I stopped putting out 78s of my ukulele music.
Right.
Right through it. The shellac would just melt.
But then people have to buy another one.
That's right. It's built-in obsolescence.
But
I
knew I was going to say another problem we're running up against. I don't know about you guys. Yeah. You guys we're all in our mid 40s.
Sure, let's go.
Okay, sure, yeah, I'll agree with you.
Yeah, that's right.
Early 30s.
48.
Okay, so our friend, a lot of our friends are like, great, you're doing a podcast. Where do I watch it? You know, or like, do I get it at the bookstore? Right? And it's like, no, you download it off of iTunes or off the internet and you listen to it. It's like a radio show. People don't even know what a frickin' podcast is in our age group. Have you guys run into that problem?
Well, you know, our show appeals to a pretty young and hip listener, we haven't really heard that. I don't know. Have you heard
mostly
that?
Babies.
Mostly babies.
We cannot turn it off.
That's right. We're kind of the baby Mozart of podcasts.
That's awesome.
They listen to us and get smarter.
Actually, when we have had, and it's weird to say fans, but we have had fans of our show, they do tend to be younger. And that does feel a little bit like, oh, maybe you shouldn't be listening to our cussing and our, fine. It's fine. But you're right. Yeah, once you've, because you've made the mistake of saying, you've got to go to this site, then download it to pass. Because our age, if it's more than one step, screw. You know, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
You know, and I got to, save it on a file and then listen to it on a, forget
I'm just going to the porn site. Hell with that.
But the next
thing,
if you go to like our website, sneakydragon.com, and like you want to just listen to the show, it is a one button click.
Yeah.
And then it starts to play. And that's what I tell my older friends.
That's what we should do.
Well, I think we have that set up.
We have
got that set up.
You're our webmaster.
Don't tell them iTunes. That'll scare them.
Yeah.
They got to go to this and to that.
Do I have to pay for it?
Yeah, they're scared.
Do I need a credit card?
Do I have to get my credit card? Oh, how much will this cost? Yeah. Who's got my information?
Yeah.
Yeah, forget it.
No, that's for people who already listen to other podcasts. If you already do, you know, you can just look up what are you going to do and it'll show up.
Well, yeah. Podcasting sounds weird too. It's like, what's that mean? That's a weird name.
It is a weird name, yeah.
Yeah. You just go like, it's my online radio show. That's done. All right, now I've now you understand it. And someone young will get it this way.
Right.
And someone young will go, podcast. And that's a little out of, you know, I listen to Instagram and I got to see this on Vine. I'm like, what's new? What's the new thing?
Yeah.
Trying to catch up.
I just input it into my face. And that's how I... Okay,
it's
young
on
man.
Face fork. It's on you face put your fork in your face, and it'll just shove it into your head.
Then you'll hear what we're talking about.
What is it? Ah, it's just a couple of guys talking around a table. Yeah. Really? Is that different than like all the other shows?
Yeah, it's. It is, I mean, like I hear what you're saying. I mean, it's. But I find it. I don't find my friends are that out of it. I find it's more. Like parents and people like that who have absolutely no concept, but you know, they're parents, so they can't even be bothered to look it into it, you know. Yeah, so, which is fine. I, you know,
Dave is doing really it.
I don't want
he's
my
never made dad. Any money off of his art. Must be, I'm just not even worth going near it.
Well, they knew that at the beginning. I was told that right from the get go. You can't make any money as an artist, you should become a plumber.
Oh, that's true. You really were told that.
Mm-hmm. I was.
Yeah, me too.
Pretty much every day. I had a weird, my parents are weird because they would give me a drawing table, but then tell me, don't expect to make any money from that.
Right.
It's really strange.
And then you sold the drawing table.
That's right.
Actually, he gave it away because the guy's, how much you want for it? Oh, don't worry about it.
I don't think I'll take money for things.
I'm terrible at garage sales. He's like, I'll give you
this beautiful poster for like the table. That's right. And the free table. It's gorgeous. Yeah. Pointless.
Then the guy came and he says, I'll give you nothing for it. And I was like, oh, I'm terrible at haggling. Okay.
Here, you take $5.
That's right. I paid him to take it away. So this is really heavy. Can you give me $5? Actually, it's still folded against my wall. I couldn't bring myself to throw away my drawing table from
it's
grade
so
12.
It's so interesting, though, that like your parents, are like, you can't do this. You're not going to succeed.
Yeah.
And now you've got a semi-successful podcast, not necessarily the Sneaky Dragon one.
That's
we got another one.
Yeah, you're doing the Beatles thing.
Yeah. Completely Beatles podcast. But there's absolutely, it's like a dream in that there's no way we could possibly tell our parents about this. They couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There's nothing we could show.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, there's people. There's thousands of people that listen to this. Never understand.
I worked for the city for years. I worked for Waterworks Department for years. And my parents were like, finally he's got a good job. He's going to do well. My brother went off and got his doctorate in early childhood development. They're like, Steven's got a job at Waterworks. And my brother's like, I had my thesis printed in the foremost publication of early childhood development. My dad is like, that's great. Who the hell reads that? You know, Steven's working for Waterworks.
And check this. Look at the tap.
Yeah, the
tap.
It turns on.
You can thank your brother for that.
That glass of water you're enjoying? Steven over here.
But what would be worse if your mom, say, really was interested in your podcast and listened to you every week and then gave you notes? Wouldn't that be much worse?
No, you wouldn't want that, but you'd want her to ask you, like, when you talk to her, say, how's the podcast going? Which I have never heard her say.
Well, she doesn't understand the words.
I know, but I just say, you know what I mean? Like, that's what you would like to hear.
My mom was always embarrassing. My mom would be like, how was the, have you got any gigs?
Yeah.
It's like, my mom saying gigs, like, makes my skin crawl.
She meant a particular kind of carriage, though.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
One
are you jamming?
Gig.
It's like, stop it, Mom!
Is it hot and cold running groupies? Do they fully put out, or is it just heads and tails? Like, what do they expect? How does it work? Now, but your daughters listen to the podcast, though.
My oldest daughter loves the podcast. My younger daughter is completely indifferent to the podcast. Right.
That's probably for the best.
How old are your kids?
19 and 16.
Oh, okay, the 16-year-old's indifferent.
She is completely indifferent.
Right,
to the show.
Right.
And that's she's fine. A fan of comedy.
She's part of the new kind of YouTube generation, so that she has her YouTube people she likes to watch. So she watches all these like British guys who just do basically like a podcast, but shorter, like maybe 10 minutes, and they just talk into like a video camera and tell stories and act things out. And she just loves that. She watches them all. And there's Australian ones. There's a French guy she watches, a guy from France. And because she's in French immersion, so she can understand them. She always brings them over to me and, Dad, watch this hilarious video. And then I watch it. I can pick out like every third word. I'm like, I think I'm following this. And then I kind of, was he saying blah, blah, blah? She goes, yeah, okay, thanks. I don't really laugh at it though, because it's that's right. I don't laugh at it because it's so much work to like understand what's happening.
Is
it
funny or French funny?
He's pretty good actually. He's quite good.
How many listeners has Sneaky Dragon got? How have you gotten them?
Should we tell them? It's kind of embarrassing to say.
Sneaky Dragon.
It's kind of like asking someone what their income is.
You're right. Yeah, it's income, it's dick size, it's everything. There's no right number because you either get like, oh, that's sad, or quit bragging, jerk. Right. It's like one of the two.
Yeah.
But the sneaky is in the hundreds, and the completely is in the thousands.
Sneaky is actually in about the 300s.
Yeah.
Right. So you're doing better than us.
Okay.
Sorry.
And then
how did you do that?
Completely Beatles is it's up in the 3,000s, close to 4,000 now.
So. Okay, cool. Terry was.
So how did the transition or the addition of the Completely Beatles come about?
Well, I think it was just a case of where we were thinking a way to promote ourselves as a podcast was to have another podcast that people would be interested in. Because our podcast, I mean, people who listen to our podcast like it. It seems to be entertaining. But it's hard to explain what it is to people because it has no topic.
Well, the first time I checked you guys out, like way back in November, it was like, well, this is entertaining, but what's it about?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then when I went to do some research, you know, I'm looking at the episode list and, they're talking about Beatles albums. Cool. Like, listen to those. Yeah, and then I realized it was a second podcast.
Okay. Yeah.
But I was a Beatle geek in my day, so I totally enjoyed it.
Mm. Well, sure. I blatantly ripped off. The trick is to blatantly rip off something that people would never know that you're ripping off. Right. And there's a podcast called the James Bonding Podcast that I listen to where they do a different James Bond episode, film every week or so. And I went, oh, that's pretty good. And Dave is such a music nerd that it was like, okay, and Beatles is, I think, your favorite band.
Yep.
So it was like, well, that's a clear thing to do. That's easy.
I meant Slow.
And that's right. My favorite band. The Slow Beatles, which is a different band entirely.
All their songs.
I like the Slow Beatles. Beatles were good, yeah.
All their songs at 16. Yeah. You just have to have that turntable.
And cost.
Great musicians, not very smart guys. That's
right, yeah. So what we, but then I made a mistake though for the first couple of episodes, which was first couple of episodes we did Sneaky Dragon at the same pace. And then we're going to keep it fairly tight and we're going to keep it kind of jokey. And then it was like, oh no, the way this goes is Dave brings in a lot of information.
Yeah.
We got into the right tone about three or four episodes deep.
Yeah.
And if you read our reviews, they're pretty much all shut up, just shut your damn mouth, shut up, I hate you. And Dave's cool.
Yeah, I saw that.
Four stars, 4 out of 5 stars. Shut up, Ian up, I hate him.
Yeah, let's just get one more star.
Is there any way we could do this podcast without Ian? And your comment was no.
I didn't want to join in because I'm the same. No, like, Ian's there.
And you don't want your big brother defending you. Yeah, going, hey, man, he's cool.
That's right. Everyone loves me, but you should love
me
too.
Well, I was sort of thinking, reading those, I was like, well, we at least they're getting comments. Like, we don't get any comments on our podcast.
But
I guess once they start flooding in, I mean, there's probably going to be a lot of comments complaining about ham.
Yes, that's right. Imagine there will be.
Here's my question.
I'm ready to step down at any moment.
Have you had any situations where you would meet people who listen to your podcast? Like, has there been something where you've done something in public in your podcast format?
Yes, we did the polar bear swim.
Yeah, oh, right. Yeah. That was cool. Yeah. There was a lot of...
That's a good idea.
It was interesting. There was lots of Asian folks there taking pictures of us in our Speedos and our orange shirts. We haven't seen any of the photos. It's like, put them up on the web. Send them to our website. But I'm pretty sure that somewhere in, like, Korea, there's, like... outside of a noodle house, there's a big cardboard cutout of Terry and I in our orange Speedos, like, come eat noodles!
You're the mascots of that.
You're the mascots of that restaurant, yeah.
Oh, that'd be amazing. You're the Mr. Sparkle of noodle houses.
I'm hoping that. That's what keeps me alive, thinking that.
I had a good idea, though. Sorry, please, digressing.
Please.
And
into good ideas, yes, please, for once. Right, let's do it.
This is just for strategies for our podcast, but for the next... polar bear swim.
Yeah.
We should try and get as many of our many people as possible to join us in the same outfits.
I think we should do our own polar bear swim next year.
But do it when it's warm.
Yeah, that's
like, right. It's a really do good that. Lesson.
Yeah. Then people will want to come.
Yeah, that's, I think that's your problem, yeah. fellas. Because yeah. it's freezing. That's the worst day of the year to be right. doing it.
What Let's do it in July.
Call it the Let's smart do... polar bear swim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sensible.
The sensible polar bear swim.
The sensible
polar bear swim I like as well. He's very
yeah.
sensitive.
That's a different one.
He'll still kill you, but he'll be like a little crying after
he's
small.
He has tears.
Right.
But I think one of the big turning points, sorry, just to go about 5 minutes back, which is the way I usually do these things.
Yeah,
we did Vancouver, not Vancouver Fan Expo, but we did VanCaf
last year, yeah.
which is a comics arts festival. And that's where we ended up meeting a couple of people who listened to the show.
Mm.
And what we kind of found out, and I also do a thing called the Critical Hit Show, which is a live Dungeons & Dragons thing, and we meet people after that too. And the people that like our show really like our show. And that's something
ours too, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing yeah. you don't get from the numbers is like you get people who just want to hug you. Or in that case, we had a girl come up from, where was it in the States?
She came up from Seattle.
From Seattle. It was her 16th birthday. And she knew we were doing a live show. So she and her family came up because she wanted to see the live taping.
It was her birthday present, her 16th yeah, birthday present.
Yeah. So like, you know, you just, your heart fills up. You go, okay, that's cool. That's well, super let's cool. go let's go do our funny Cheers. Nonsense.
Yeah. I know. And the pressure's on. Like this show better not suck for a change.
Yeah.
yeah,
and we had someone show up. Well, our first live show we ever did, we weren't supposed to be doing, apparently.
Yeah.
And so they shoved us in this room where it was supposed to be like a Star Wars toys spot, not podcast, but like panel.
Yeah,
and people showed up who weren't there to see us. Mm. But one of the guys who came to that came to this because he liked what we did
yeah.
so much. So, yeah, you don't get that from the sheer numbers. You don't get the impact that you're
well,
having.
Well, I mean, even if – I mean, if we're doing, say, 200 – between 200 and 300. I mean, if you did a live show every week and you had 200 people come out to see it,
yeah.
you'd be ecstatic.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
so,
totally.
No, I am ecstatic that we have around 100 people
mm-hmm.
every week listen
yeah.
to our show.
Yeah,
it would be nice if you know you go on the website that shows your stats. It'd be yeah. nice if that little graph was getting bigger, because then I'd be like, you know, it would soothe my anxiety or something, you know, at least, you know, if not making money, at least soothe my anxiety. People, come on.
Or if people would do everything we told them to do, you know, like start tweeting your friends and like, you know, grab random strangers by the shoulders and like,
yeah, it seems it's hard to believe.
Kill yourself.
It's, people just yeah, don't
want to. That's the problem. We've been telling our fans to that's kill right. themselves, and our numbers are going
that's
down.
That's right. This one's for you, Damien. Like, Damien's podcast is going through the floor. It seems popular though.
Everyone's doing what he's saying. Yeah, it's
you guys have done live shows though, right?
Because we've done I guess three or four now.
Okay,
four
yeah.
Because we're gearing up to do our first live show,
okay.
At the Fox Theater, we're nailing down a date in May sometime, and we're gonna yeah.
Yeah, we did one there, but it was still a porno house.
So yeah,
I wish we had done it back then.
Well, I mean, Dave yeah. was in the bathroom anyway, right, so right. it was just convenient.
Yes, I just like
so for gone. The first time the people didn't want out. You're like, hey, how you doing?
Buddy, you yeah. work out?
Join us. There's room at the trough.
You know I like it. They know what to say to me.
When are you doing the one at the Fox?
We haven't nailed down a date, but it's early in May. It's going to be
cool.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to bring back some of our old guests and do a little bit of a talk show, variety show kind of
nice.
Thing. Yeah, I think it's going to be fun.
My offices are right across from there, so right. I'm like hoping that it becomes kind of a comedy place as well as a musical
Sunday
place.
Sunday service.
Yeah. That's right. That friends of mine, yeah. yeah.
They're doing that every Sunday in April, starting in April.
Yeah, the live show is interesting because so much of this is just, you know, back and forth with your friend, right?
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, I've got to turn this energy outward, right. but that's too outward now. Turn it back, and you
yeah,
almost got to pretend
yeah.
like they're not there, but then they're there.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a weird vibe doing a podcast live. Definitely, it's very, very different.
It's, yeah, very different, and you're right. With the audience there, because when you were just talking to each other, when you're just in a room talking and you kind of get on to say a kind of a serious subject,
yeah.
it's fine because, you know, you're just talking away and you're having like this kind of serious conversation. you don't have an audience staring at you and you're thinking, man, are we boring these poor people? Like, they're just sitting there listening to our gabble. Like, this is awful. Whereas when we're just talking in a room, I don't care. I can just put the gabble out on the internet. I don't care. You guys can turn it off. I guess people could get up and walk away if they wanted. But, you know, they're probably Canadian and too polite to do that.
Right.
So they're just going to sit there.
Has that happened to you?
No.
Because I that would be what I'm afraid of is that, I mean, I've emptied rooms before in bands, right? So it's like, but you're loud. At least it's like, fuck you, right? But when you're sitting there sort of like talking like this and everyone, well, you're a comedian. You've probably had
I've emptied rooms. Yeah, absolutely. Sure, yeah, for sure.
What's that like?
Not pleasant. It's not a good time.
No, sure,
yeah.
Not.
No, not at all. But it's weird. Yeah, because our show, as goofy, we're all being goofballs here right now.
Hey,
we're all goofy good time guys, huh?
Hey.
But I don't think any of us here are scared of like turning it serious if it gets serious, and we'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. Dave's got some controversial views on the Holocaust. We'll talk about that later on.
I think it happened.
He thinks it really happened.
Yeah.
That's his thing.
Oh.
But yeah, we've done that really revealing stuff on the air. There's really, and I think that passes back to, or goes back to, both of us did autobiographical comics. And when we did those, it's like either you tell stuff or you don't.
Right.
But if you half-ass it, then it's just going to be, it's going to be completely weak. And so, yeah, we've put our feelings out there in ink before. And I think our podcast is similar to that, in that if it comes up, we will try to tell the truth and be as honest as possible.
Yeah, but and same with comedy. When you're doing stand-up comedy, you have to be yourself. You have to be honest to the audience. Otherwise, it's not going to work. It just feels phony. Mm-hmm. Like there's a phony talking, you know, and you can tell that it's not a real person. They've just put on this persona to tell you these particular jokes. And they don't carry any weight to them, and they just feel put on, you know, so you just, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. The biggest mistake.
Doesn't resonate with
people. The biggest mistake I hear when I listen to podcasts is a guest going, well, this is all boring. And it's always the most interesting thing.
Right. Yeah.
Is that it's like, no, you're just getting real. And,
Well, that's what I'm digging about this, because we end up going there with people. We get real, you know, you start getting some depth to it.
Mm-hmm.
And people, they dig it. And it's actually, I love doing it. It's kind of a fun. It's something I didn't expect from doing this.
Well, that's the difference, again, between live and the podcast, because the podcast is an earbud in your ear.
Yeah.
It couldn't be more intimate. It's just you and a voice in your head. And so you can get a little deeper, but when you're in the room, you got to adjust it a little bit.
A bit more broad, yeah.
Yeah. But you're performers, so, you know, it's really splitting the difference between your performer self and your podcast self and finding that middle ground.
But
I'll be there to boo you. Boring.
And then leave.
Yeah. This is no Sneaky Dragon. I just said that. I don't know.
You can see it at www.sneakydragon.com. That's all I'm saying. What's funny, because I don't see myself as a performer. I think you know that, right?
As performers.
We met as performers, but I stopped performing because I had trouble as a performer. I couldn't remove myself.
What were you doing? Were you doing stand-up?
Doing more sketch comedy.
Oh, okay.
That's how we met. So I started a sketch comedy troupe at school, at high school.
That's how you guys met.
Do lunch hour performances. Yeah. And so, Ian came in. He was the Paul McCartney of our group. He just,
And Dave was the Linda.
I was the Linda. I was definitely...
Stood in the back.
That's right.
With the tambourine.
With the tambourine. I did backup vocals.
Behind the keyboard.
I did backup vocals.
Right.
Yeah, you don't want to hear that tape of just me doing the backup vocals.
You weren't the Yoko, at
least. That's right. She was interesting.
Yeah.
Not that Linda wasn't interesting. That sounded terrible.
Linda was really stoned on pot.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think they were smoking a lot of weed at the time.
I think that's true, because there was one of the albums, the producer just walked out on it in L.A. because he was just so – it was the guy who produced Chicago, that James – Garcia or whatever. Yeah, he just like left. He was just so sick and tired of it. You guys are just stoned all the time. Like, this is no fun at all. Like, he just left. Which is weird, because when they were the Beatles, they did not ever, and except for one accidental time, do like marijuana. Like, they did uppers and stuff, but they didn't do stuff that, you know, expanded their consciousness while they were recording, because they wanted to be seriously into what they're doing, you know, and not wasting time. But yeah, so it's interesting that once you're done and you're just kind of like, whatever, I'm a Beatle, I can do whatever I want, you know. I
smoke a lot of weed.
It doesn't matter anymore. Go to Japan with a lot of weed. That was a mistake. Whoops.
That was a mistake for him, yeah.
I shouldn't have done that, I guess.
But what you were saying about you being a performer, you were too high to do scenes.
Yes. That's right. Yeah, that was my problem.
That's what it was.
I was just going to say, like, when I performed, is I have a hard time not looking at myself performing. Like, I have this critical... third eye that's watching me performing and just going, No good, Dave. Knock it off. You're not fooling anyone. And so I still have that when we do the live shows. Mm-hmm. I have this real problem with not being in the moment, you know, and being outside myself. I've gotten a little better with it, but still.
Right.
I think by the time we do the 10th live show, I'll be really good.
So that's why you're
saying... But I personally find that doesn't happen when you're doing the podcast. It's just talk about what's on your mind, and if you don't like it, you can fix it in post.
I've never done that.
Neither have we, but the knowledge that you're too lazy to do that.
No, you're right, though. Because
never fallen in the net, but knowing it's there changes my behavior.
That's right, you're right. Just the fact that if it's possible to take out, like, my long segue where I start, you know, being the what would I be doing?
I don't know, but you're doing a good job of it right now.
When I get this lost, is a good example.
Yeah,
good. I can take out all that hesitation if I wanted to. If
it was a throw eugenics rant.
What time did this happen? I better write this down so I know when not to bother to go back and take it out. Oh,
and speaking of not editing, I said something about Steve Bays on last week's podcast, What Are You Gonna Do podcast. Steve was a guest on our show a while back, and he was fantastic, and we loved having him. And I think I said something like,
Steve Bays from Hot Heat.
And I said on the podcast, I said, well, Steve Bays didn't get us any more listeners. And then Terry was like, you should probably edit that out. And I'm like, yeah, I probably should. And I didn't.
He didn't.
So, no, I forgot to. So, anyhow, Steve, we're really happy to have you on the.
I'm grateful. I can't speak for him.
I really was great to meet you, Steve. And but why? I thought you were a rock star. Why aren't there more freaking listeners?
What can you say? You can't. Yeah. You can't predict what will bring interest to your show.
I know.
That's the thing.
Walter brought us interest. We had him on.
Yeah.
We got lots of hits from him.
And you probably weren't thinking.
No.
Here's a guy who's going to bring along a lot of hits with him.
Well, we had him on because we're like, how do you, why did we have him on? Because he's an author and Terry's interested in writing books.
Yeah. Well, he was self-publishing and he just sort of fit the mold. Mm-hmm. Here's a guy who just started doing something and making it work on his own.
Yeah.
Plus, he had a lot of friends on Facebook.
Yeah,
so we were thinking of that from the get-go.
That's a big part of it. Yeah.
For sure.
I mean, I think that's one of the toughest things is when you say, like, I'm going to take my already existing audience and I'm going to use those to grow my... No, that's not going to work.
Yeah,
you can't get any more flowers out of that soil.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Leave that alone. And that's one of the reasons we did the completely Beatles thing.
Right. Yeah.
You know, was like, okay, well, we know they're sort of popular, so if we leech off that popularity a little bit...
That's right. We asked yourself, have people heard of the Beatles? Like, do you think people would be interested in this? Yeah.
And then what I did was I went to just Beatles fan sites and said, hey, we were doing this podcast. You might want to check it out. And, you know, they'd already developed a fan base, so we didn't have to pursue it.
Excellent. Yeah.
Some of them checked that out, and that kind of tripled at least our Facebook, you know, likes. Yeah.
And I think this is one of our challenges, is there's not a lot of websites out there of people talking about not knowing what to do.
I disagree with you. I think, like, when you go to the bookstore, the self-improvement section is enormous. And if you tap into that...
Our whole thing is, it's like you go to the self-help section and they're like, we figured out what to do, right? And you buy the book and it's like, this is how you do it. But we're like, we don't know what we're doing, and hopefully we'll figure it out and join us for the journey, right?
Yeah.
But
because I've read those books. There's some great plans in there, but I can't seem to, like, make them happen.
Well,
so.
You see the size of the section and go, well, this must be a lie because there's this many books.
Yes.
And if there was a way, then just that book would be the one book. And we would throw away the other books, but clearly there's not that book.
And there would be no industry there at all. There would be no, like, I mean, if self-help books actually worked, there would be no self-help book. There would be that one book you're talking about.
Yeah, it's like the diet section. It's like there'd be the one book. And
it's not like you go to
on fucking yachts. It'd be great.
It's not like you go to buy a polio vaccine and there's like a bunch of different types, right? There's just the one. It's the one that stops polio. Like.
Yeah, but it causes Alzheimer's. Anyhow, no, I'm not going there. No, autism, sorry. Yeah.
It's interesting when you talk about self-help.
I like that you forgot it wrong.
I got it wrong. It
makes me think possibly it does. Yeah.
Well, I had the polio vaccine and I can't think straight.
I was just going to say for our generation, I feel like we are like the anti-self-help generation. Like, you know, we're such a cynical generation. The idea of reading like How to Win Friends and Influence People. Can you imagine when you're in your teens or 20s, if your dad had given you a book like that and said, you know, you should read this book. It'll really help you with your life.
I would have shot him. Yeah,
he would have been like, throw, toss, you know, like it just would have been forget about it. So it's hard. It's still hard for me to think about those kind of books in a positive way. Like, you know, like the whole idea of having like a self-help guru or whatever just seems like an insult.
Though I liked it. Now that's Dale Carnegie, right?
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. I read some Dale Carnegie when I was in my 20s.
Okay.
And what I liked about it was he was talking about problems people were having at the turn of the century, the last century. Yeah. They're like, you're worried about work and family, balancing the two. I'm like, you were? Like, I thought we were just like throwing kids down chimneys to clean them back then. What do you mean? Women couldn't vote. And just like all the problems are like, these are the exact same problems as now.
Yeah.
So whenever people talk now and go, oh, things are so much worse now where the kids have this, it's always the same. It's always the same.
Because back then it was, I got 99 problems and a suffragette ate one of them. That was the difference.
That was a great old timey song.
That was a great old timey
song. Rudy Valley.
Have you heard that one?
99 problems, suffragette ate one.
Vote Odeo, 23 Skidoo.
He's the raciest guy.
He's really going out there with his social commentary.
And those dancing girls with their ankles exposed.
That's right. That's right. But, you know, I'm sure then there were about four guys sitting around some table going, how do we get noticed for our minstrel show? How are we going to stand out? Maybe red-faced, fellas? What do you think?
It's time we started.
Go a different way.
Let's go Redskin. Start a Redskin show. Oh, well, Bill Hickok did that already.
Isn't that how the Blue Man Group got started?
That's right. That's exactly the same. That's right.
Oh my gosh, are you saying that's a minstrel show? With, oh, imagine someone who's colorblind just that goes to see the Blue Man Group and just goes, what's this? It's like,
yeah,
are
they
you
wouldn't.
Kidding me?
They would add problems in the days of black and white TV.
Yeah, that's what the with these guys.
Well, when black and white TV was around, no one cared about minstrels.
That's true.
They're just like, whatever. They do like minstrels celebrate.
It'd be another one. Yeah.
Tonight on the Jack Benny Show, we celebrate the minstrel show. Woo! Yay!
That is a good point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mr. Interlocutator, whatever that was called.
What?
Well, there was like one guy who was like the kind of the MC of the show,
right.
And he was called Mr. Interlocutor, or something like that. And he would run the show, and he would point to Mr. Bones. Mr. Bones would do his thing, and he'd point to the other characters. I can't remember their names now, but there were all kinds of different roles that were in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And one would dance, and one would tell jokes, and one would sing, and one would, yeah.
Wow.
I have a record of a minstrel show.
So it's not racist.
It's because it's a record. I can't see them.
That's right.
Yeah.
You take the blackface away by having it on an album.
The record is black and white. That's a problem.
Okay. Yeah.
But you turn the cover against the wall when you're listening to it, right?
Listening to that, I feel less guilty.
To be politically correct.
Less, turn less, the lights off.
Less liberal guilt if it's turned to the wall. Just try not to read the liner notes.
But yeah, to get back to that original point a while ago, and whatever, it's like...
What,
yeah,
are you saying we went off on a tangent?
That's basically what we do on our show. Mm. It's you got to find a new audience. That's the angle, and so... You know, the cheapest way is to find one that's already there. That's loosely connected.
So I'm curious with the Beatles. It seems to have a bit of a horizon on it. Are you going to start getting into the compilations and the tribute bands?
No, not really. No, I mean...
which is...
The solo
I think
albums,
we'll do... Yeah. What's it called?
Completely Beatles.
Okay, let's do Completely Wings.
Yeah.
There you go.
There we go.
Come on, think of your own Completely.
There's more Wings albums than there are Beatles albums.
Yeah.
There's probably a lot less Wings fans than there are Beatles fans.
So this next song, they were smoking a lot of pot.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Like
let's
I was
get into Ringo's movies.
Yeah, that's right. Caveman. And then there was...
Give my regards to Broad Street.
What that was Paul McCartney.
That was McCartney.
Well, who was also Ringo, though, co-starred in
But Ringo is just, this is a co-star. Yeah.
And the original Point.
The original Point. And then...
Oh,
No, he's not the original Point. The original Point was Dustin Hoffman.
Was it Dustin Hoffman, then it was Ringo, then it was Alan Thicke.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, but Dustin Hoffman did the original narration, but some kind of contractual dispute happened, and so his voice was taken off. And plus, Harry Nilsson was friends with Ringo, so he's like,
Ringo got the gig.
In between guzzling Brandy Alexanders, how about you record the narration for my animated cartoon based on an acid trip I had?
But we do have an endpoint to Completely Beatles.
Yes, we do, because eventually the albums run out, and we were kind of thinking of doing one for the movies as well. And then it's over. I mean, we just have
to... Well, maybe we'll do one that's the stuff we left off, like questions from listeners
as well.
And then we'll wrap it up. I also like the idea that
maybe
it's got
a question
an end
show,
to it,
Yeah, I do like that idea, actually.
Yeah.
I'm actually looking forward to it. Because
it's been a lot of work.
It's been a lot of work. Like, when we first started, I was kind of like, oh, this is really easy. Like, because with Sneaky Dragon, I mean, we record the show on a Thursday, either on Friday, late Friday night. So I might stay up all Friday night into Saturday drawing the title card for it. Or I'll get up really early on Saturday morning and start editing the show and drawing the title card. And it can take me between 5 and 13 hours to do a title card for the show. So it's a lot of work. So when we started doing Completely Beatles, it's bi-weekly. And all it has is one title card image. It just has the one image for the show. Yeah. So this is going to be so easy. But then I realized all the research that I have to do for the show. I have four or five books that I pore over and extract facts from and then collate them together into a big, a bunch of notes that I read during the show.
It's like taking an oral exam every 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. And I'm constantly thinking to myself, okay, I got to do two shows tonight or two songs tonight. I got to get notes done for two songs tonight. So every night I have to have a couple songs done. So it's this constant thing of work. So now I'm kind of thinking, yeah, I'm looking forward to the end of Completely Beatles. Boo, Completely Beatles. Kill it. Although I love doing it, but at the same time, the end point is nice.
And I enjoy listening to it. So.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thanks. And it is fun to do. And I mean, yeah, the feedback's awesome. And it's fun because you do get back and forth about things. Like so today someone wrote to their Facebook page and said, oh, it was too bad you didn't talk more about She Said on the Revolver episode. And you're kind of like, we talked a lot about She Said, but you loved that song. So you just didn't get enough of it, So, it's that show, that Revolver show, I think was 2 hours and 20 minutes long. Like you just start feeling guilty after you hit 2 hours that you're taking this time talking about this one record. But there's just so many facts that you want to talk about. And there's so many interesting things to talk about with the Beatles. So it's really exciting. You can tell I enjoy talking about them by my level of excitement.
Yeah, you're very excited about talking about the Beatles. It's great.
I feel weird about that guilt that you have for the length. It's like, people can stop at any time. It's not like going to a movie and you're sitting in the theater like, this guy.
How's it going to end? Get to the end. Tell us who the killer is.
We always joke, there's some poor person on the working out at the gym, and they're like, as soon as this episode ends, I'll get off the machine.
Pretty soon, I gotta go to bed.
That's right. Yeah, no, it's just, but I know that, I know that they could turn it off. But at the same time, I feel like most people want to just listen to the show and one kind of go.
Well, we do have people that write us and say, I listen to the show every day.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's not a daily show, so you're clearly a liar, sir. And then we realize, they break it up over time. Yeah, right. You can't listen to all of this at once.
No, it's too much. My excitement is too much. You can't take it.
Yeah, just little chunks.
Now, with your show, do you interact with your audience at all? Do you ask them things? Do you send stuff in?
Yeah, we do. They don't.
Well, yeah. Half of you seem to say they
do. I was thinking of a good answer, totally, but he answered confused. It quite accurately. Yes, I'd say realistically, we're trying to cultivate feedback, and that's something we need work on. It seems like, people like our stuff on Facebook and whatnot, but we don't get a lot of suggestions. We don't get a lot of back and
people
forth.
Are always just like, keep doing what you're doing. I'm like, what can we do that we
thank yeah, how you is everything? It. It's fine.
Yeah.
In what way? It's good. Yeah. Yeah.
Are you just being polite or are you?
Everyone's nodding and smiling and we're not learning much
rather
from it.
Than active. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, please be mean to us.
And I got no idea if this was what really set them up because, I know the guys who do Stop Podcasting Yourself. Mm-hmm. I know a big part of their show kind of it was doing always okay.
Yeah.
But when they started getting people calling in with overheards and stuff, okay. And then so people would listen to see if their thing got on. And then they'd, of course, tell their friends, I'm on this week and that sort of thing. And,
that's a good idea. Maybe
have a call. It'd be fun to do a call in or get get a voicemail line and
that's a thought.
I think that's the difference between old timey radio shows like in the 80s and 90s, and this is the interactive element that you can actually get going with your audience, because people want to do stuff, but their natural inclination is to just passively listen. And now I'm done and my earplugs are out and I've forgotten the show the second I take it off, but I enjoyed it when I was listening to it and I'll listen to it next week. But if you ask me to do a task afterwards, if it's fun, I'll do it. But otherwise, we're done now. Thanks.
Yeah.
And I think you have to reach a critical mass of a certain amount of people in order to get that kind of response starting to happen. Because, if we did a percentage of how many people from our whole audience communicated to us on Facebook or the website or wherever, or Twitter, it's a very small amount. It's a very select group of people who are regularly writing to us.
Yeah.
There's a few topics that will bring out a couple of people will always comment if you bring out a couple of topics. It's like catnip to them. They can't help themselves.
Right.
But you know, mostly it's just a small group of people who, you know, like the back and forth to communicate with us, which is great. I love writing, you know, writing to them and talking about stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you, you know, if we subtracted our audience down and then, you know, if you only said 1% of them are writing, well, 1% of 100 people is one.
Yeah.
So there's one person.
So we got person who's writing all the time. Actually, she's always, this gal, Michelle, who you went to high school with, she's writing me a lot.
Yeah.
Like, telling her this, I like this and I don't like that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, 1%.
There you
1%,
go.
Yeah.
So you know, nice if you have 2%. If you have 200 people, then you get 2%, you have two people writing to you. You know, so it kind of, or not quite like that, but you know what I mean? So it works. And the more people who write, the more people who, then they want to comment too. So then you end up with more... and more people writing because they feel the need to comment, to interact. We've had wonderful things. We had a listener send in because I was working on my deck for quite a while, and so that became part of the show was Dave's deck talk.
This is one of those things you go like, this is too boring, but people love deck talk.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like, look at Mike Holmes. He's made a freaking career out of it.
So we had a listener send in his home renovation story, and he sent pictures of the work that he did and stuff like that. And so we posted that on the website and talked about it on the show because it's interesting. You know, it's great that someone would think that, you know, want to share his experiences too. So it's fantastic. Like, that's
what I think that's fun. Part of it too, is it's just we haven't been at this a long time. Mm-hmm. And we're, you know.
We're old age.
It looks like a patch of dirt, but hopefully there's some stuff sprouting underneath.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Agreed. Well, I think your idea for a show, when we were talking about it, was like, oh, damn it, that's a good idea for a show. It's one that you're actually getting mad at. It's like, oh, rats. Because people nowadays, you know, I think it's like you do 7 careers on average in your lifetime now. That's the deal. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, so people will be doing this. They'll be like, okay, what's next? Okay, what's next? And how do you do?
Well, we get sidetracked too. Like, we had Ron Reyes on, and he was like, we just blah, blah, blah. And then, like, you know, after 40 minutes, he's like, actually, you know, I'm thinking about changing my career. We're like, oh, what? What's up? Why are you bringing that up? It's like, well, that's what the show is about, isn't it? It's like, oh, yeah, right. Well, you can talk about it if you want.
Look at this jerk. Yeah, talking about the Beatles on the Completely Beatles podcast.
He's got a nice job at a flag shop. Why the hell would he want to do something else with his life? He makes good money.
People always need flags.
Wait a second. Yeah, I just want to say,
it's
Ron.
Some empire.
Just want to pause for 1 second, folks. Yes. Pause for 1 second.
Yes.
Ron Reyes works in a flag shop.
He's
the ex-singer of Black Flag.
Yes.
Works in a flag shop. He's that is too beautiful.
The flag shop. Yeah.
The flag shop.
I just got that. I just freaking got that after years and years.
Didn't have the heart to say it out loud.
And hey, guys, what he was saying, that's clearly a red flag, too. This is all quite ironic.
He wanted you to point it out to him. Can't bring it up all the time. I work at a flag shop. Feeling pretty black about it, guys. Feeling pretty... The future's looking pretty black, I gotta tell you.
Yeah, anyway. So, if any of your listeners want to tell your friends about this show,
don't forget to tweet us and like us on Facebook and give comments on iTunes. And
oh, if there's one thing people can't hear anymore, it's that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the second thing. Remember to like us on Facebook. Yeah. You might as well be knocking on their door trying to talk to them about Jesus.
Have you heard the good news?
About podcasts?
We're on Facebook.
There's a lot of pairs of white guys around tables, folks. They got plenty to say about their childhood. You know what albums they used to like? Yeah, I do.
Did you hear the code word there? Like? Did you hear what albums they used to like on Facebook? Yeah, it's true though. To be honest, I'm thinking about changing my job. So it's funny that everyone is.
So what are you thinking of changing your job?
Any job but the one I have.
Right.
Okay.
That's pretty much where I am right now.
Right.
Any job.
Yeah.
After a while, you just get tired of the job.
You get tired of it. Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
And you feel like my job is a very interesting place where I work because I'm the only employee. There's 3 people who work there. 2 of them are bosses. 2 of them they own the company.
Yeah.
2 bosses, 1 employee.
1 employee.
That seems a bad business plan.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Yes.
You better get out
I can
now.
Cut that in half
because
right now.
They have slowly...
So if they both want coffee at the same time, it must be really stressful.
It's so hard to say no to both of them. And that's the other thing is I don't care anymore, so I'm like the worst employee. In terms of like I do my job and I'm a good worker. I work hard. I do everything I have to do. I do way more than I should do. But I'm like the least cooperative employee you've ever had because I'm beyond caring anymore, right? So it's kind of like, Dave, you know what we should do is we should move all these shelves over to the other side of the room. Yeah, you should. I like that idea. Get to it, guys. I'll be doing my job over here while you do that. Because yeah. You know what? I already have a job that I do over there. I don't need to move shelves.
Yep.
And it's just kind of weird because, you know, through attrition, like they had a bookkeeper. She quit. They did not replace her. So, you know, all the jobs that she did fell to me. So, you know, I'm doing invoicing, I'm doing shipping, receiving, I'm doing answering the phone, I'm repairing, I'm designing packaging.
Now that's major savings for them. Now, do you get a raise on that?
I did not get a raise from that.
No. Well, that would be what we call, I don't know if we can cuss on this show, bull nonsense.
That's right.
We do cuss on this
show. All right, that's bullshit. Yeah. That's a lot of bullshit.
But that's the problem.
Actually, it's your show, too. It's our show and your show.
Oh, yeah. That is true.
Well, our show is for the kiddies.
You guys,
so
you guys cuss?
Don't use the word bullshit. My daughter's listening to this show.
Oh, sorry.
Send your ears. It's okay. It's fine. My daughter's 19.
In fact, first time I was listening to your show on wireless headphones, it was like I'm listening and all of a sudden beep, and it's like, oh no, is my battery running out?
Well, that must have been completely Beatles, because we did that show. We do have all ages, so we cannot swear. Mm-hmm. So there's one show where we slipped three different times, and he's like, that's bullshit.
Okay, back to your job.
But I was just going to say, like, what's interesting about a job is when you get hired for a job, like I was hired as a shipper receiver, you will forever be a shipper receiver in that job.
Right.
It doesn't matter if your role expands, if through time you take on other tasks just because they need to get
even
done.
Even if they hire another shipper receiver, he's going to lean on you all the time.
It's still, you're still defined in their mind as that person. And so shipper receiver only makes this amount of money in other jobs. So I should not be making more than a regular shipper receiver, even though my job as it exists now is way more than
have you what brought a up to receiver. Them that your job has
no
expanded.
You know, I'm too shy and with I'm not a person who so pushes if, forward.
You do Dave, get a paycheck though, or is that you're not
no I don't actually
yet.
Get it okay I get a beads every three weeks now. It was 2 weeks, now it's 3 weeks. They give me a few beads, Mardi Gras beads,
right on,
and I show them my breasts.
So if Dave's bosses are listening, guys, this is fucking bullshit. You got
to
give the guy a raise.
Soon,
yeah, you're gonna lose him soon. So you better fire him fast.
Now, are you looking for like regular work, or are you looking for creative work, or what are you?
There's no creative work. That's the most depressing thing.
Wait, no. Let's follow. I have a follow up. I know, but I have a follow up. So you're saying no creative work exists or you're not interested in?
No, no. I'm qualified to do.
Okay. Now, all right. Once again,
welcome to
Dave's
neurotic world of Dave.
Let me go to the land of bullshit again.
Okay.
This is the biggest frustration I've got in my life. Is the amount of friends of mine that are more talented than I am and things who have just decided not to do those things that they're, you know, Dave is a better artist than I am and he is a better writer than I am.
I wouldn't say that.
I'm a pretty great writer.
You're a great
writer. Over time, because I've been doing it solid for like, you know, decades. But clearly you are better at the things I see other people doing in my professions than them. So that's frustrating to me, and I have no way of getting you to go, you know, you could submit scripts for this or art for this, but I understand there's stuff that's blocking you in that's stopping you. But that's you're far from the only friend I have that's like that.
Yeah, no,
you know,
it's common.
There's so many relatives I have that are better than me at the shit I do.
The most talented people are not always the ones that are successful at it.
Because
of that shit that goes on in our heads saying, I can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
The ones are just like... My, you know, like
in anything,
his work sucks, but it's like I can get this out. I can get this,
and that's what our podcast produced. is about those blocks.
Yeah.
No, and that's why when I was listened to the first few shows, I was listening to the one with Tom Jones, and a couple other ones, and I was
Tom's great. He's the
He was really interesting because he's actually a businessman, so he had like a sense of how business works. Whereas for us. You know, we're all like, whatever, throw it in the air, see where it goes.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, we do not have a business plan for Sneaky Dragon, for instance. There is no...
Well, we still don't have one for what are you going to do, but that's the idea, to get one together. He sold us one. Now he's going to follow it up and get the money out of us.
Okay, okay.
But yeah, he hasn't actually written it yet, but we're hoping to do that, Tom. We have money to give you. Well, we don't actually.
But my other thing I was going to say was that it's really depressing at my age... reading through like going on monster.ca or whatever and realizing exactly what you're qualified to do.
Yeah.
Which is not very much.
Right.
I left university after second year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I left it for personal reasons. There are probably good reasons why I left it and my own fault that I didn't go back. But nevertheless, because I kind of blew it there, it's really hard when you're 48 to look at want ads and go, oh my God, basically, this job that I'm doing now is all I'm qualified to do. I'm really good at and qualified for this
job. And if you had to reapply, you probably wouldn't qualify.
That's probably true. The reason I got the job is because the boss's son, who was working there then, his wife was a school teacher, and so is my wife.
I think it's safe to say that about 95% of the people in this world could not qualify for the jobs they already have.
That is a good point. Let me just throw this out. If you go to sneakydragon.com and look at the title cards that Dave has done for the last 2 years, look at those title cards and go, no, he's not qualified to do anything else than heavy lifting. It's ridiculous. Let me give you an example. Dave and I, like many years ago, we're doing a sketch called Mr. Fingerman for this guy who was not a very good director, but had got some money for the CBC to do it. And the idea behind Mr. Fingerman was, it was a shop teacher who loses a finger, the finger survives, and goes on to teach kids. You know, and it's one of those things. And so, you know, but the guy is such a boob that the initial scene is taking place in this shop class, and we're cutting real wood.
Yeah.
And then so I wrote a scene for Dave, and Dave comes in as the ambulance guy.
Yeah.
And he's got a bag of groceries because there's one ambulance guy that goes like, we would have got here sooner, but he had to stop for groceries.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of a funny little gag. Yeah. And Dave's that guy going,
Yeah.
And the director goes, you know what would be funnier? If there was a live fish in the bag.
Yeah.
So he gets this giant live fish, shoves it in the bag, the fish escapes, it's landing in the sawdust, we're all
horrified. They had to go to Chinatown to get it, right? They went to
poor fish.
To the seafood place in Chinatown.
We're putting it back in the water. It's like, get it back in the bag, let's not use it. It's terrible. They don't end up using Dave's scene because the bag's wet. Oh. It's awful. But I remember turning to you at this point and just going like, we could be doing this. Not for this boob, but we could be doing this, and you know you're more qualified to do this than him, right? Anywho, and then back to, let's put the fish back in the bag, and there we go.
It was, it was kind of one of those sort of humiliating moments in life.
Even if they did do it, PETA probably wouldn't let you air it.
Back then, I don't think they were.
Yeah, they didn't care.
As much with that.
They didn't care about fishes in those days.
But no, to me, I mean, we have discussions about honesty on our show, which is is it best to be honest or to help people's feelings, or where do you balance it? And whenever this kind of thing gets brought up, I want to just go, honestly, you can do so much. You could get work in comedy. You could get work, doing your Photoshop stuff. You could get work cartooning. You could get work all these different things. But I understand there's a block that's there.
Well, the block, I think.
And the trick is always I've got to get you, as I say, to do the different thing. This is the little side thing. And it's just we've got the, it's like we always say, we're going to open the shoe store.
Well, you had a thing and then you just couldn't afford more trucks, right?
That's right. We opened the shoe store.
Painting, he was in the zone.
Yeah, totally. Then we have the shoe store and we open the little lemonade stand next to it, to bring in business to the shoe store. But Dave's great at lemonade, so I'm just going to get him to make the lemonade. And then we have a great lemonade business, but we're always going to pretend it's about the shoe store. And,
I guess it was me who started doing the title cards for the podcast. So I kind of put my own neck in the news for that one.
Well, yeah. Now you got a great collection of title cards, though. You should freaking shop them around, man.
Sell them. Initialed prints.
Yeah.
Numbered prints.
That's a good idea. Actually, they're beautiful. Yeah. They really they look great.
Thanks.
You're a great. Thank you. Great graphic.
Now,
artist.
Ian, you bring
He's
up
a good writer too.
You bring up a good point. You're working in comedy. That's your gig.
He works in comedy, and he writes comics. He writes Simpsons and Futurama comics. Yes. He's the head. You're still the head writer for?
Let's go, whatever. Yeah.
They still call you head writer?
They can't. Some do, yeah. It's a weird thing. But, yes,
but the bottom line is...
The bottom line, sir.
You're pursuing your passion for a living.
Yes.
You're earning your keep, doing what you love.
And as of right now...
What's it like?
I'll tell you something. Let me tell you the truth, because we're getting real, man.
We're going to get real.
I've got five jobs that are five paying jobs that I do right now. And as of this, I've been working every day for the last 2 months... And I haven't gotten paid from four of them, and all of them have had heavy deadlines and have made me work literally every day. I work for about 10 hours a day.
Yeah.
The days that we do our podcast, I do five hours before and 5 hours after.
Okay,
and
to be fair, I still haven't paid him.
That's right.
The check's in the mail. I told him that when we saw each other.
But even though I'm doing the things that I love, trying to get paid for them, it doesn't matter whether it's the CBC, whether it's from anyone. It doesn't matter how big the business is, how small. My wife works for Warner Brothers. She works for DC Comics. And they've been 4 months late now on a royalty for her that they owe her. And taxes have been basically freezing our bank accounts because it's so late. So even doing the things that you love, which is what I'm doing, It's a huge pain in the ass.
That's what we're learning.
It's a huge damn pain. And this is the smallest business. I do like this regular show at the Rio Theater, and they don't pay us. Yep. Like, we've got to every month, we're trying to get money from them, and like they're now 2 months behind on what they're doing. And yeah, everyone from Warner Brothers to the local little theater, no one's got, you know, everyone wants that work the next day or that night, and they don't pay you. But I love what I do. So it's tough to complain to my friend who works at the pharmaceutical company, though I do want to say to him, you can do other things too. You're great. But please continue with your question.
Well, that was pretty much it. It has been my observation that in this day and age, it seems like you got to do a job three times. First, you got to get the job.
Okay. Yeah.
Then you got to do the job.
Right.
And then you got to get paid for the work you did.
Yeah, well, what I
and
find
sometimes
is,
doing the job is the quickest and easiest part of the whole process.
I'm gonna throw an extra thing. You got to do the job for free first to show them that you can do the job. So you got to like do a sketch on YouTube that's funny enough to get you the job doing the sketch comedy show. Actually, you've got to do 10 sketches to get you to show that you can consistently do this. Or in my case, I had to do 18 issues of a mini comic to show the people at The Simpsons that I could, you know, write comics sort of consistently. And you know, I was with Dave dragged me to San Jose to the Alternative Press Expo. And if I hadn't gone with him, I would never have met the Bongo Comics folks and gotten my gig.
It's all up to me. I made him go. He didn't want to go.
Every job I've gotten has been, I've done something and they've seen the free thing that I've done. Mm. And that's how, that's gotten me the gig.
To be fair, you did sell the comics, even though you told the border people that you weren't going to.
we did get some trouble. That's true. Well, I had long hair then, so that was a problem.
That was two guys, one with long hair, crossing the border.
Well, perhaps I should mention, one of our policies is we try not to say anything on the podcast that could cause us problems with border people.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I didn't realize that.
But, yeah. Sorry, people with borderline problems.
You guys were in a band, so you faced way more issues.
Yeah. He used to dress up like Hunter S. Thompson when he was crossing the
school. That's right.
Really?
Well, I got to tell you.
That'd be great.
I think the worst it got was in North Dakota. They had us down to our underwear.
Oh, really?
But they didn't get past our underwear.
What was that?
That was when we were going to Chicago from Winnipeg.
They got us down to our underwear?
They got me down to my underwear.
They just really like
you,
Terry.
Are you sure it was the border and not a rest stop? That's right.
No, they didn't buy me.
There a trough?
They gave me candy, so they were kind of, you know, they were nice about it, but...
Interesting.
Yeah, I never got me down to my underwear.
Okay,
but borders, I remember. I'm not even
borders do not have glory holes. That's how you know where.
Just they have old glory hole.
Though I do remember,
that's in the south.
When
we got stopped though.
Dave was sitting there and he was like, "Oh man, I'm so nervous." And he asked, "Can I use the bathroom?" And they told him, "No, you know, you can't use the bathroom."
Yeah. They're really mad at me.
You can't. Yeah, they got really mad at you because he was like, "Oh, you're gonna dump your stash, huh?" Yeah,
go to the...
And so now he really had to pee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I just went. Just there. When the guy yelled at me, that was it. The guy with the gun yelling at me, that makes me pee. Can't help it.
He just went out the window. It's like, it's America's problem now.
That's right.
Deal with it. No, borders are no fun.
No.
But no, of the four of us here, Ian, I guess, would be the only one who's really like, succeeded, and I mean, through. I mean, succeeded, not succeeded,
again,
but succeeded in following that. You know,
what is success? Yeah,
because you guys. I mean, do you guys feel like you kind of got sidetracked in your life as musicians?
Well, I totally feel like all my artistic endeavors are extracurricular activities. I have a day job
now,
and
but were they always?
We used to be on welfare. That's how
I went on welfare as well for a chunk of time.
Or I shouldn't say we. You never were on welfare, were you? I spent like 10
years. We prefer the term artistic grants. You just didn't say that on the form.
Yeah, yeah.
You didn't have to do that thing where they gave you the phone book and made you go through it. And
I got to do that once.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a fun one. Yeah. It's nice to be the A's in that phone book, huh? Getting all those calls.
Yeah, yeah. I don't really want a job, but fuck you, give me a job.
It's a AAA auto. I know why you're calling.
Alcoholics Anonymous.
No, we're not hiring. Oh, actually, I wanted my car fixed. Oh, sorry.
Did you crash it while drinking and driving? Yeah, okay, well, we can hug. We're A. All right, come on over.
This guy's so mad at calling himself Aardvark Cleaning. Why did I do that? So dumb. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, there was a time in the history of Vancouver when you could afford to live here and collect welfare. which is amazing. Yeah. I just can't believe the fact that...
Well, they haven't raised the welfare since.
Seriously,
they haven't.
No,
they haven't.
That's
it's still like $540.
Like, you had friends who rented a house in Vancouver, and they're all on welfare.
Yeah.
You're like, how can this work? Like, it just... no. Okay, it
works. Let's go cash it at the shame bank. Yeah. It's just like, you go to the bank, and it's like, you got the special lineup, fella. You're not here like people types. You go over here. Yeah, you do that. So everyone knows what you're doing.
Yeah, they have a separate lineup.
Lineup for you, Pally.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I never collected welfare.
It's so shameful, the whole thing. Like, you come in, and the first people are just like, let's see your bank account. You got to drain it all, because otherwise they're going to take it.
Yeah.
And then it's like a lot of, like, so why can't you... Just shame. All the way to where it arrives, and then you've got to go to the bank and like, we're not done yet. Special line for you.
Humiliation's not
over.
Come
over here. Put on this hat.
Come over to this trough.
That's
right. Get down to your underwear.
You're
collecting welfare. That's what you're thinking of.
Oh, yeah, that's nasty. Glad I don't have to do that anymore.
Well, I've never been unemployed, and I've never been on welfare, so I guess because I lived with my parents first. No, I'm just...
when did you stop living with your parents? Like, how old were you?
26.
42? Yeah, there you go. Oh. Well, those were about the ages that I was on welfare. Yeah, yeah, so yeah. It's like,
yeah,
you know,
too.
You were biological welfare.
Yeah, because I was kind of stretching out school for a really long time. And then after I had cancer, I still kind of hung around the house for a couple of years after that. Just get my feet under me, so...
Right.
And then, yeah, so that's how it worked. But, I just think it's interesting that when you have... these dreams of being an artist and you're totally impractical dreams, and there's no one around.
I honestly thought I was going to be a wealthy rock star.
Yeah, of course you did, because you're a teenager.
Mm-hmm. That's what the TV told me.
Everyone tells you that.
Now, when you picture that, how long did you picture the career going for, like forever? Like Paul McCartney forever kind of thing, or like...
I didn't think it that far ahead.
No one does. That's the thing. That's the real trick.
But you know what I did think was I did think if a big chunk of money comes in, I will sock some away.
Like, that's smart. Okay.
I knew that much.
I was just like, I'm going to fucking party.
Oh, yeah. Well, there'd be so much that you could do both. Right?
Yeah, right.
Of course. Because
That's the truth. I mean, my wife's more successful than I am. She's a comic book artist, and she owns a chunk of the book that she did. She's a creator-owned book. But, like, she's one of the more successful people, but... Yeah, it's everything ends, right? Like, there's no you do it, and then now you coast. It's not like there's a job, and like the job is writer, and you'll be doing that forever in this. No, it's like going from job to job to job. So yeah, you got to do like five things at once, regardless.
Yeah,
yeah, mm-hmm. And then there's no security ever.
Well, there is a little bit of that attitude in like Vancouver bands, or I assume any city bands, where you have multiple bands. Like, everyone is not just in one group. They're in several groups.
Yeah,
so.
So the sideman kind of... Toronto was always great for that.
But we never made money with our bands, because we weren't even trying to make money.
No, that's a thing.
We were just waiting for, you know, some guy to pull up in a limo and hand us a contract and like a briefcase full of unmarked bills, right? We came that close, I'm sure, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, Shane Nelken,
there's
a good example of a guy who actually kind of cultivates a career, you know, or whatever. I think he does side work, and he does his own thing.
Yeah.
And he's sort of, I don't think he's aiming for like to be the next Michael Jackson. I think he's, you know, it's like, I get paid at gigs and I sell some records. And it's an actual strategy that people use, believe it or not. You know, or I'm thinking of someone like Carolyn Mark, always comes to mind. Yeah. She's been working for years. She doesn't make a great living, but she makes a living off of what she does. She's always on the road. She's always, you know, flogging
doing stuff. She's on CBC radio a lot.
Exactly,
She has an appealing musical style as well, though. She has kind of a countryish kind of thing that works generationally that she can be at a Basic Black. I saw her at Basic Black. I saw her when Arthur Black was doing a live show. I saw her perform there.
Yeah.
And for an audience, besides me and my wife, pretty much everyone else, you looked around and went, why is everyone so old here? Like, well, because I'm at a CBC thing, of course. But, you know, she worked there, right?
Yeah.
It worked there. And it also works for her, like, at the Railroad Club or whatever. Railway Club. Performing there, you know, Railroad Club. That was my club when I was a kid. I had the Railroad Club. But the Railway Club is different.
That's an American term.
Yeah, that's right. The Railway Club, you know, it's a different, totally different kind of crowd, you know, but it works for her, yeah. Yeah, but those kind of people... Not only, but they're willing to do the hard work to that point, you know, and they have like a plan in mind. Whereas like you guys say, you had no plan. You just expected someone to drive up and give you a bunch of money.
We expected someone to hire us.
Yeah.
And give us really big paychecks.
If you're good enough, clearly we'll be seen. That's what everyone thinks.
Yeah.
Because that was, but that was our upbringing, right? Like somebody hires you and gives you a paycheck, and rock stars just basically get really big paychecks.
I guess that's part of it.
And but it was never like ours. And I mean, I sort of figured out at some point maybe it doesn't work that way. And I went to business school for a couple of years, okay. BCIT in my mid-20s.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And did that help you like plan with your music career?
Well, that was the idea, but it didn't really.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, but I mean, music—the problem with the music career, like you know, you guys had—I hate to say it like this—but you guys had it with Slow. Yes. You had the momentum. You were on this moving train.
Yes, we did. Yeah.
You know, and you guys were part of a scene that was going to burgeon.
Yes.
You know, and you had attention on you had national attention on you guys.
Yes.
And you behaved like 20-year-olds.
Yes.
Yes.
And you didn't have anyone. You didn't have anyone. You didn't have like a Bruce, whatever, like a Bruce Allen guy behind you who's there to guide. Like, he can take a Bryan Adams or take a,
yeah.
And that was
Michael Bublé, you know, and help them and guide them to money. You know what I mean?
The problem with Slow always was, and I think that like, I remember Grant brought, what's the guy, Steve Macklem, who now manages Elvis Costello, but okay. he's been working for as a manager doing.
So he does.
Diana Krall guys. But he managed the Point of Sticks, and I think he was like Katie Lang or something. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, he was like a manager, and it's like, and Grant was like, "Well, I'm going to bring him to a Slow show because he was from the scene too." It's like,
yeah.
You got to check these guys out; they're the best. And it was like one of those nights where we just fucking sucked, right?
Yeah.
He's like, why would I'm not going near these guys?
Yeah. You know?
And at the time, this is also 1986 or 1985, and like Bruce Allen was like, the money's in Loverboy, you know, right? It's like we were like, you don't want to hire these, you don't want to put anything behind these guys,
yeah.
Because they're, I mean, we.
But actively, I don't mean Bruce. I don't mean
no,
for
no,
sure, Bruce
no.
Allen. But I just mean someone.
But
like
that was definitely one of our Achilles' heels. We never had good management. And
yeah, I mean, you
we
look
didn't
at,
know. We just got our drinking buddies to be our managers.
Yeah,
we took them on the road. They drank all our beer.
You look at the Beatles. I mean, Brian Epstein made lots of mistakes, and people can laugh at him for losing millions of dollars and merchandising or whatever. But I mean, it was through his hard work and his dedication that the Beatles left Liverpool and became the Beatles. If it wasn't for him, they would still have been playing the Cavern.
Yeah.
2 years later, you know.
Where do you think you'd be now then? If like, because you're not going to be Loverboy, because Slow could not be Loverboy.
No,
And you wouldn't want to be Loverboy, but even like.
Well, the plan was basically to be Nirvana.
There you go.
Like, just we'd be so huge that the fact that we were punk rock wouldn't be an issue. We'd just get rich and have so much money, it wouldn't be a problem.
So by this point in your lives, where would it be? Would the band then be broken up by this point?
I'd be dead.
You'd be, which one are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you know, you want to be Nirvana, but you don't want to be Nirvana.
Yeah.
Like,
you want to be Kurt. But,
With those guys, as you were then in that headset, if you'd gotten that fame then.
Well, the guys that always come back to me, like, to me, from those days, of the guys who were in Green River, and I mean, okay, so Mark Arm and Steve, the other guy, one of the guitar players, Thompson or whatever, I can't remember.
Sorry,
yeah, he, I mean, they went on and did Mudhoney, and they had a good career.
The other guys
went on and Stone Gossard and Jeff Ament went on and did. Well,
Pearl
they did,
Jam, yeah.
They did Mother Love Bone, which was, they thought was going to be their Pearl Jam, and then their singer died.
Yeah.
And then they did Pearl Jam, and now they're like they're like 48, 49, and they're still playing, but they don't need to.
They don't need
to. You know, it would be nice.
They cashed in.
Yeah, those are the guys of that scene. I mean, and then the Soundgarden.
Soundgarden,
guys too,
for
right?
sure, yeah.
Those two bands, they actually did what we were sort of thinking we were going to do, right?
And
in my arc too, it was kind of, I'd have enough money in the bank. I'd have, you know, a wife and kids, and I wouldn't necessarily be a drummer, right?
Yeah.
I'd be writing my own songs or whatever. Like,
I didn't even have that foresight. You know, it was like we got through this tour.
You guys were touring in a broken down van, most likely.
But exactly. I think definitely the mindset was someone was going to give you a lot of money, and then once you had the money, everything's figured out.
Well, it happened.
That's a lottery dream.
It happened with Copyright, right? And like those guys, they got
the big fat record contract.
And Geffen Records came, you know, looking for Slow. And they got Copyright.
Yeah.
And they basically got Slow, but whatever. And they copyright managed to, like, Chris Thorvaldsen has a story, the guitar player for Slow and the guitar player for Copyright. Yeah. To this day, he gets an invoice every year from Geffen Records for $1 million.
For, like, what they owe them?
No, what he owes Geffen Records. Yeah. Because Geffen, that's what happened back in the day.
Yeah.
Geffen put like a ship. I don't know if that's exact, you know, yeah, like it's a huge amount of money. It's like, sure.
They had to pay. Good luck. They had to pay, right, for studio time. Yeah. They had expensive videos, yeah, made for them.
Yeah.
They, exactly, were all the hype, all the promotion, the guys going around.
Yeah. And everything was kind of like, well, I need a new guitar. Okay. Well, buy a guitar, send us a receipt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you can go to our buddy's guitar shop and just sign for it.
Yeah.
And you go to buddy's guitar shop and, wow, your prices are kind of high, right? I mean, it's straight out of Grapes of Wrath, basically. Yeah, like, you know, yeah, you can get groceries at the company store, and it's like, what, $4 for a quart of milk? Like,
So, interesting. They got
so they got hosed.
They got hosed, yeah, which is what really happened to pretty much all.
Happened to probably the same thing happened to Sloan as well then. Sloan got signed to Geffen.
Yeah.
They're going to be the next big Nirvana, they're going to be this grunge band. And then Sloan go, you know who we really like? The Beatles. We're going to do like a Beatly power pop record. Sloan's like, what the bleep?
Yeah.
You know,
they're gone.
And we're dropping you from the label, but I'm sure they're carrying, like, they are carrying a huge debt load that supposedly they owe to Geffen Records.
Undoubtedly, yeah. Yeah.
So. I guess like I always feel like, you know, I feel there are second acts just because I know so many people that have had second acts. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah,
you know, I'm friends with Colin Mockery, and there's a guy who, like, you know, is successful doing improv here in town, went to Toronto, did a sort of okay. And then he moved to LA, and he and his wife were selling all their CDs. And then, you know, Whose Line came, and now he's doing great. And you know, I'm looking at, like, Patton Oswalt, Louis C.K., Marc Maron. I know, like, 10 years ago, all three of those guys, I can find you video clips of them going, well, we're done.
Yeah.
You know, exactly, that's it. You know, the start of Comedians of Comedy. Patton's going, someone's going to lead a comedy revolution. Sure as hell ain't me. I'm this old fat guy. It ain't happening. And same with Louis C.K.
Yeah.
And Marc Maron was, I'm going to start, you know, WTF, just because I got no other options. And then that's the second
what,
wave.
That's what
and now
for
they're
him,
the ones who influence culture.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, I don't know if that's the same thing in music, but I come from a comedy background. So as a 40-something guy, I'm seeing the 40-something guys still do something if they've got something to say.
There was, I mean, it might not be quite the same way as with music, but I think that it is. I mean, I think 20, 30 years ago when we were all in our 20s or in our teens, it was like, I was like, well, there's no rock stars after you're 32, you know, even though, like, Keith Richards was probably 32 at the time. Right?
Yeah.
But it's like, he's done.
He'll be dying any day.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. And now here we are 30 years later. And it's like, yeah, the 40-year-old, Louis C.K. is the biggest thing, and Marc Maron, they're the biggest things in comedy right now.
And all got through it through ways that are not conventional.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Patton through the Comedians of Comedy, art house film, what the hell?
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, the Marc Maron through a podcast, that's going to lift you up. And Louis C.K. is doing this, he's doing his own short films.
His second TV show, first one's Stiffs, more or less. And then Louis, comes along, and it's great.
Yeah. So, and basically, it's just finding that new audience, you know, because someone wants to listen to your stuff.
Well, that's why we're doing the podcast, right? It's like, we've done this and we've done that, and we're going to try this because it's fun, but maybe we'll actually, maybe this will lead to something that'll actually take off. Or, like, I did the Canned Ham thing. I was like, God, this is not going to go anywhere. And we did quite well with
it. Yeah. Yeah. Canned Ham did very well.
Yeah. Well, that's the start of almost any of the successful stories is, well, this ain't going to work.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, that's the thing. The one who's got the solid plan is like, no.
Yeah.
And clearly what we're doing now will have to evolve. Like, if we just keep doing this same thing and we're doing this in 5 years, then we fail. Like, we shouldn't. And cut to us doing this show in 5 years, whatever. But we will have tried other things. We will have done live aspects. We will have done a little comic book. You would have done an album, you know, that's like based on things you've done on this thing. You know, something will happen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's why we keep doing what we do, right? That's why we all do it.
Yeah, that's the trick.
And that was a big part of the podcast. I mean, we're not just going to record podcasts and wait for someone to pull up and hire us and give us a big check.
Who is, like, this guy?
Yeah. Who are these people back in there?
Yeah, who's this limo guy?
Well, David Geffen was one of them, right? Like, you know.
Bags of cocaine. And, no, I don't know about that. But
I mean, what's
the... It was his time in the freaking... Like, it was like in 1984, it was like... A viable, like, you know, like like, they're going to give us, you know, even though, I mean, we're all 20 years old or whatever, 22 years old, and it, everyone was getting ripped, would get ripped off. But at the time, it was like, it was like, here, people were getting signed, there were checks.
Yeah.
Yep. There were these things were happening.
There was money out there.
So we're like, great, like, our friends got money, and we're going to get money too.
If you ever read the book Freakonomics, I mean, the crack business is exactly the same, right? You get your crack dealers driving their, like, you know, they're pimped out Mercedes in the hood, and all the kids are going, I'm going to be like him. Mm-hmm. And they're on, like, the street corners selling crack. They're making less than minimum wage, and their life expectancy is about 6 weeks. Like,
well, it's the people lined up for lotto tickets.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where I think, like, arts goes wrong, is when people have the lotto fantasy.
Yeah.
Once I make it, then it's cruise control.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, well, now you're screwed. Like, I know how this story ends, and it ain't well.
Yeah,
yeah, it's basically you get enough money. I mean, my whole thing was I was going to get enough money and then have artistic freedom. I can start making movies. Yeah. I can, like, you
funny
know.
Funny story. You can have artistic freedom right now. Yes. You've got it with no money. No way. Once I get the money, then I'll do what
and
I want.
That's what we're trying to do.
That's what we're doing right now. Art.
Yeah. No, it's funny when you're actually, that's interesting because remember when I helped Can Ham, you guys wanted to do a radio show.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So I came in and
that's the first time
sort of
we worked together.
Doctor, yeah. And we kind of, and I thought we did some pretty funny scripts. I thought they were really good. And
I'd actually like to record those now that we realize we can't make any money off of it.
Well, yeah, and so you, I guess you took them to CBC.
Yes.
CBC said no thanks.
Yeah.
And then that was the end of it. And I was
most dumb thing CBC ever did.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
But I was more like, well, now you do them yourselves.
Yeah,
because
exactly. Well, that's where
you have total freedom.
You have total freedom. You can
well,
do whatever
Robert
you want.
And I had that, still had kind of had that mentality, right? Like, we got to get someone to give us some money.
Yeah.
And we should have just recorded it by ourselves. And I was thinking we should still record those scripts.
Yeah. They were fun. They were a lot of fun.
They were fun, yeah.
They're like adventure serials, only with a band in the adventure and doing a song, a couple songs each episode. It was like it was a funny.
Let me say this right now. That'll never work. Now you'll succeed. You just gotta say that.
Yeah, no, I know.
Oh, my dad just talked to me. Told me.
No, but we do have this thing that's gonna make money, and we need you to like put those radio shows on the sides of the trucks.
It's just a van you drive around blasting podcasts out of, like an ice cream truck.
That's
just our opinions of her.
It's for potties. You've heard of foodies. We're out there for potties. That didn't sound right, actually. We shouldn't call them potties.
No, that'll never work. All right, guys.
Well, I think that's a good place to wrap it up, everybody.
Okay. I think so. Wow, I've had a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
If you want to check out our website at sneakydragon.com, Dave's got t-shirts with his terrible art on it.
Yeah,
you might
never going to sell.
Never succeed, never sell. Dave's writing is on our site. It's awful, the spelling mistakes alone.
If you play your cards right, he'll pay you good money to take it off his hands.
And also our Completely Beatles podcast is also on there. We're also on iTunes and Stitcher.
Yes.
And we are the What Are You Gonna Do, Guys?
Yeah. Waygood.com, WAYGD.com.
Yeah.
Or it helps that we have a name that we have to spell out slowly.
Well, this guy with his Completely Beatles spelling completely incorrectly. It's like, in our spell check generation, man.
Oh, it's fine.
It's okay. It's a small joke that three people will get.
It's for the deep cuts.
Well, thanks, guys.
And thank you as well. Thanks for being on our show.
Yeah.
And thank you for us being
thank
on
you for
your
being on our show.
Yeah. Dave, thanks for being my co-host. All the rest of you, thank you.
I'm Terry Russell.
I'm David Dedrick.
I'm Stephen Hamm.
I'm Ian Boothby.
And this is Sneaky Dragon.
What are you going to do about it? What do you want?
That was terrible.
How much are you going to... This has been Rich Guy in a Limo.
What are you going to give us?
This has been the only professional guy in the room.
Blew it. I don't get paid.
Good night, everybody.